Today's sales professionals are challenged to establish trusting relationships with the right prospects. They face buyers that choose to self-educate and not engage with a salesperson until they're ready to begin the buying process. With social selling, sales professionals use social networks and digital content to build their professional brand, their company's brand, and create experiences that enable buyers to buy. Welcome to the Linking into Sales podcast, the social selling podcast hosted by Martin Brossman and Greg Heyer. Let's start Linking into Sales.
Welcome to Linking into Sales with Martin Brossman.
And I'm Greg Heyer.
And we're excited to have Tim Moore here. This is a special show. Over to you, Greg. Yep.
So let's talk real quick about NC State Technology Training Solutions. They are our sponsor for the show. We're actually here on site at NC State at the McKimmon Center. If you're looking to continue your professional education, be sure to check out the resources that they have available. So if you're interested in a social media management certificate, want to learn more about how to manage social media or take a social selling course from us, maybe not. Maybe you want to take a digital photography class or learn how to use Excel better, or maybe even Evernote. Those courses are available here at NC State. It is a nonprofit organization as well, so we're very happy and to have them as a sponsor here on the show.
So, excellent.
All right, so we're done there. So let's go and talk about why we have Tim here today.
Yes, and I've known Tim for, I bet, 10 years at least.
Maybe more.
Right? If
more,
not,
I'd say more.
We share a passion of sales, training sales professionals. We even worked with the United Professional Sales Association project. It was a project to bring sales into existence as a profession. It evolved into some other aspects. And you, we both went to the same presentation where you got caught on fire by the idea of selling to the generations, dealing with different generations, and training on it. And you've been teaching all over the world, state, and everything, on understanding that it's almost like different cultures with this multi-generational world we're in now, and how to communicate, how to sell to them, and other things, right?
That's true. And about 6 years, 7 years ago, I owned a sales training company and still do. But at that time, we were doing traditional sales, just like anybody else would teach. And we had a sales training center, and people would come in, and we did seminars and things like that. But one day, I went out to a beautiful country club, Briar Creek Country Club here in Raleigh, and there was a gentleman there. His name's Cam Marston, and Cam was speaking about managing across the generations. And I didn't really think I would be there very long. I kind of came in to support my friend Gary Thomason. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I thought I would sneak in, shake Gary's hand. He'd know I was there. He'd feel good about it. I'd feel good about it. And I'd sneak back out and be on my boat in the lake in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
That's where I was, a traditional salesperson's thinking. And so Cam got up and started talking about managing across the generations. And it was like somebody hit a tuning fork, because all of a sudden I began to see how important this is with all the other training that I delivered and received in my life, that this put everything into place. It's kind of like the mortar between the bricks that holds everything together. All that other sales training is great and it's important, but these are the relationship building blocks that really hold it. So once you understand how your prospect or your client thinks and why things are important to them, then you can engage and build a relationship with them, because all of a sudden you can communicate with them in a different way, maybe through different technologies, through just different things you bring up. But not only that, but you can bond together because you know why they think things are important. It's the why that's so important with this. And so we'll go into a lot of different levels today, I'm sure. But it is, for me, the one single thing that makes sense of all the training that I have been to and taught over all the years.
Well, I think it's we had a conversation here, you know, prior to starting the show, and just trying to understand, you know, the gaps that occur with just in the generations. And, it, you know, sometimes the older generations don't understand what the younger generations are doing. I think that's, I remember being, you know, also hearing this from folks that were maybe earlier than the boomer generation, that they just didn't understand kids these days, right? Didn't Will Smith write a song about that? His parents don't understand. Never mind. Sorry. wrong song. But it's interesting because we're seeing more and more millennials and not necessarily Gen Xers, but because we talked about that as well, millennials moving into these buying positions and they're making these decisions.
Right.
And we still have boomers out there that are doing sales.
That's right.
And we also have millennials too that are doing sales. And how do they communicate? Because obviously there's a difference between how they communicate. Right.
In fact, that's a good place to jump in. Let's kind of start with two, which we'll call the baby boomers and the millennials, because those are two of the most predominant in the media. And then I do want to break down a few of the others as well. Okay. But that's one where I'm seeing the most challenge in communication in the world as well. So you could just start with kind of distinguishing how, because you've got millennials working for baby boomers and baby boomers working for millennials. And it's almost like it's like a class cultural clash or something.
Well, there is a clash, and just so your audience will have an understanding. Yeah. So I'm not going to go all the way back to our grandparents, which, or maybe my parents who are in, you know, basically in their 75 or older, mm-hmm. older. That generation, the greatest generation, we'll just leave them on, because they're really not in the workplace very much anymore. They might own a company and show up, but they don't really drive. So what we're really talking about are baby boomers, 80 million of them in this country. They were the largest generation, and you know the reason, everybody understands. They were called baby boomers because of the boom that happened after the war when all those soldiers came back. Families started, houses were being built, families were growing, schools were being built, hospitals had to be built. It's no coincidence at all that Disneyland in Florida, California, I don't know why I said Florida, the Disneyland opened in 1955, which is the dead center of the baby boom. Mm-hmm. So 46 to 64 are baby boomers. And so those are the birth years.
Yep.
Right. So if you look at that and you think, okay, all this stuff was going on and it stretched and pulled and all the stories and the music and all the things that were going on, the movies and all those affected the view, the lens that a baby boomer looks through. I'll give you a quick example. My son is scheduled to go he works for a company that's traveling around the world, and he's scheduled to go to Vietnam to do these performances. He's excited. The only thing that came to my mind immediately was I almost shook a little bit because, you know, when I grew up, I had a draft card. My friends were going to Vietnam. People I went to college with had been to Vietnam.
Yep.
All that was the baggage I was carrying. But for him, he's never known it any other way because he's only 27. So it's those things. So if you take that and then you go to this next, we're not going to talk about it at the moment. We'll come back to them.
Yeah.
But if you talk about the Gen Xers, a smaller generation, mm-hmm. there's only 45 million of them. But there's mm-hmm. this huge mountain.
And that birth age is what?
They were born 64 to 80.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so 64 to 80. So you have, there they are, a much smaller generation. So there's this great big mountain of baby boomers, a deep valley of Gen Xers, and then a huge mountain, even more, 85 million millennials. So you've got these huge populations with a smaller group in between, and they all see the world differently. A millennial, you know, you think about these millennials, basically from 81 to 97 is what we think are the birth years for them. And so you're looking at somebody between the ages of 18 and what, 35, 34. So that's the range for them. And so even they split a little bit. We think the split point for them is about 27 or 28. The younger millennials see the world one way, and the older millennials see the world a little bit differently because they do mature a little later than other generations mm-hmm. have. It takes them almost a full decade later. We would like to say that a millennial at 29 is equal to where a baby boomer was life stage mm-hmm. at 21.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't tell your kid, if you're a parent, say, when I was 24, that didn't mean anything because they're not at the same life stage. People get married later. They buy homes later. They get a mortgage later. They have children much later in life than they did just even 25 years ago. So it's a different experience. So that's why you start having these clashes. And then you add on in there, because from what, about 95, 96, the technology boom that has happened, and you add that onto, as millennials came through the world, there was this new technology that they could all grab. And, you know, they're not a new species. As much as baby boomers like to think that they're a new species, they're really not. Mm-hmm. What they've done is they've adapted to new technologies for communication and to speed up work and make all these great things that have happened. What's Facebook, 12 years old now? Mm-hmm.
2003, I think is when it
started. So, yeah. I mean, we're not, it's not, no. it's not no. very, so, yeah. And you look at it and you go, everybody I know at some level, not total immersion, but they're on Facebook at some level just to say hi, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And so one of the first communication things I've noticed is that I'm 56 years old. So in my age group, being in person, shaking hands, meeting in groups, you know, I need to look you in the eye to know if I can trust you.
Exactly.
I need to be in front of you. And then I've really worked to look through, I'm going to put the millennial example that I see more as getting more data from texting than I can get, you know, to really put it in perspective. And so moving from a world of preferring more a direct communication through a texting world as a start of talking. Then I remember I was trying to connect to one of them. I wanted to meet in a group and I said, you know, let's get together for coffee. And they said, I'd rather not. And I thought that was kind of an odd statement. And then I said, well, how about getting on Hangout? They prefer not. And then I noticed when I text, communication was fine. So it wasn't they didn't want to talk to me. It's just that it was such an obvious, like right up front. And then I actually said, you know, at some point I need to be in front of you to understand how I can trust you. I don't have the skills you have of understanding trust and working together just through a text medium. And that was a real kind of a beginning. So could you comment on that? Because in sales, we have to understand the language communicating between.
You have to understand the language and you have to understand the channels. So there's two pieces of it there. We always say that millennials love their phones and they hate to talk on them.
Uh-huh.
You know, I had a guy just today was telling me his daughter, he looks at her phone bill. She's 16 and he's looking at her phone bill. There's 30 minutes worth of talk time on the phone bill. But there's hours of text and
data
on there that he says it's just so reversed from his phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a different world. So texting certainly is the channel. Texting is the main channel for any millennial. And that's a lot of times it's not a channel for a baby boomer, or it's not even it's considered kind of rude to start something that way. If somebody said, I want to get in front of you, and they said to me, oh, wow, less text. Well, you almost feel as if, well, they just pushed me off to the side. But maybe you're in the circle. And the reason they tell us this, and we talk about this all the time. The reason that a millennial will tell you that they would rather, I would rather be texting with you is because your thoughts are more concise when you have to text. I can work with multiple people texting different messages at the same time. If I get on the phone with you, I'm kind of stuck with just you. They have a record of it. They can go back and look at it. There are all these reasons. And if you look at them, they make perfect sense.
Exactly. When I started, I was the one where I'm going, come on, you can't talk.
Yeah.
And then I thought, wait a second. Now I'm coming from notoriously when I think I'm too right, I get suspicious. Mm-hmm. And then finding from there. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah. So this is interesting. I was actually listening to a podcast earlier today and they were, it was a marketing podcast and we were talking about all these different tools and things like that. And then they got into this discussion on how, you know, what was his name? David Allen with the Get Stuff Done book. He has, I think it's our Get It Done or something like that. And in his process of thinking is, you know, your brain is meant to do processing. It's not meant for storage, right? So is this the case that millennials have actually figured out that, you know, they use their phone to store all the data that they need and they go back to it and reference it? Or
could
is this
be.
Well, think about how much, think about it. You're a little younger than us.
Right.
But think about in your world and then in Martin's world.
Right. And then really old. Oh, no.
And really old like me. Yeah. But just think about how all that works. So let's go back to that for a second. Where was all the data in your house when you needed to write a report? Martin was probably Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yeah.
Now,
Didn't have a full set.
We went to the library.
The library
had much, much more than you could get, you know. So, but today, all the information, all the history of the world and everything that's going on is available on some kind of electronic device there. So you can't possibly remember all that stuff. What you'd have to remember is how to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so these devices have allowed us to, how many times in a week do you go, well, who is that? I'll just Google it.
Right.
Find out who that is. I'm watching a movie or last night I was watching a football game. It was the Green Bay Packers. And I said, they had a quarterback about two decades ago, and his name's Don Mikowski. And I'm watching the game, and I just say, Don Mikowski. And I get his page, and I look it up. He's in real estate in Atlanta. Oh, really? So, was never possible. Usually those questions just kind of bounced around your mind and left for a while.
Right.
And then you didn't think about them. But now it's there, and you can find out instantaneously whatever question you have. And so it's a wonderful world to be in. It's no reason to fight it. It's just we're looking at different channels of communication today that may not be as comfortable. I will tell you, I have a daughter who's 30 and a son who's 27.
Right.
We text. That's probably 95% of
the time. I remember when you got your phone. I said, why are you getting it? So I can talk to my kids.
That's exactly right. Because they don't respond to the phone.
Right.
They don't.
I'm 37, so I'm like right there at the end of Gen X.
Right.
And I think Brian Fanzo, who we've had on the show before, he actually refers to himself as a pager carrying millennial. So which is, you know, so yeah, and I had a pager as well, so I might put myself in that category. Yeah. But I think that
that's funny.
So he, but it is interesting because I personally hate voicemail. Mm-hmm. I can't stand voicemail.
Uh-huh, interesting.
I don't want to go into another system to check voicemail, but we're talking about processes and the channels to communicate. But is there actual, if you take these tools out of our way of communicating, if we take these tools away, then do we still communicate the same way? Like, so when say someone who's a boomer is in sales, is senior sales executive, and he's calling in to sell his marketing automation product into this marketing department that is obviously run by millennials, then are they basically going to have a challenge with communicating with them?
Well, maybe not communication, but maybe connecting.
Okay.
Because that's the next place. The communication channels, they will vary. Listen, you know, when my grandfather was around and my dad was young, it was telegraph.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They remember when the phone came into the house. And we've seen the boom of the newspaper in our country to now nobody even reads a newspaper anymore. I mean, most people don't take them anymore. I mean, it's an extra expense. I can find it all out online. So those channels change, whether it's a voicemail or not. Boomers like things like hearing your voice. They're the ones in the office that says, we're going to pick up phones here. When those phones ring, we pick them up. We do not let them go to voicemail. Yep. They demand that. And they're the ones that if you come in their office, they say, come on in. It's an open office thing. But on the other side of it, that's where they grew up. You have to understand that's where they came from. So a millennial looks at that and goes, boy, I'm not going to do a voicemail. That's just crazy.
Right.
I'm not doing that. I'll text them because I can get it there instantly. They can respond when they get a moment and they can think through what their thought, the response should be instead of having it just to blurt it out. We'll just do that. So, the connection is probably the key. If a baby boomer is calling on a bunch of millennials, you better understand how those millennials think, and you better understand what lights them up, because if you don't get that part of it, and you don't understand how to have a good conversation with them, you will probably not be successful selling to them. Mm-hmm. So it's not the channel; you have to figure out the channel. Okay, I'll figure out what channel we're, whatever it is that I got to get the message through to you. You know, paper in a bottle, I'll throw in the whatever it is, good for you. We'll do that. But now that I'm there and we're talking, I better understand what lights you up, because that connection is the most important thing in sales.
Which is true for any cultural. I mean, if we're working international, we have to do tea first. It's just,
yes,
we never quite had such distinct cultural shifts in age, I think, in our world.
Because
we had cultural north and south.
Yeah.
That's been around for a while, but we have so many generations that are in the workforce still. And so why don't we take a little bit and talk about how do you communicate with each one? Because you have a good bottom line on communicating with each one, because it is you need to assess in social listening who your customer is, and then assess what is their method of communication, and then also what do they value? Like you said, what lights them up? Where should we be starting with them?
So going from why don't we put this in a context of like if millennials reach out to a boomer and vice versa?
Yeah.
Like,
so we'll, exactly.
So if I'm a millennial, mm-hmm. and I have to talk to a boomer, I understand a couple of things. First off, a phone call or face to face is important. A boomer's going to, if this is an important sales call for me, I'm going to call him and I'm going to ask him out to lunch or for coffee.
Right.
Those are important
in person,
because these are how boomers develop relationships and build bonds with each other.
Right.
this is where they grew up. They're looking at you eye to eye, and they can say, I looked him in the eye, and I could feel that he knew what he was, you know, those kind of things. That relationship is built with time. There's the body language, how you present yourself. How are you at the table eating? They used to say when you hired somebody that you took them out to eat because you look at their manners. How do they treat the waiter or the waitress? All those things were important.
Maybe this is the reason why they wanted to more table etiquette. They didn't read Emily Post, right?
That's right.
Well, they want to see, if I'm going to send you out in front of our customers, how are you going to be?
Yeah, if you abuse the waitress.
Yeah.
In this old thing in our generation, if you don't treat the waitress or waiter well, then I know when I'm not around how you're going to treat other people. So that's like an example of a rule that you may not know if you didn't grow up in it.
Yeah. So there's all
good one.
So that comes from a time and a place and a culture that boomers grew up in. And there's other things going on when you're face to face. I can see if you're just a total slob. Do you know how to shake a hand? There's all these other things that are happening.
But those are our validation methods.
Yes.
And every generation feels theirs are the right ones.
Absolutely.
And the others aren't. So it's the human condition.
It's just what they're comfortable and they just feel like, well, this is the way the world is.
Yeah.
But the world's not that way for every generation. And so you have to be able to understand from a boomer's perspective when he looks at a millennial, he's thinking, or he or she is thinking, wow, all the things that I value, I'm having trouble with what they're doing. I don't understand why they do that. Are they just rude, or are they living in a different, world than I live in? And so but if you understand, and if I understand as a boomer, I'm going to call on a millennial sales. Well, I understand a couple of things. First off, let me just give it this way. If you're a Gen Xer, I'm going to send you an email. Because you're going to check your email.
Yes, I do.
And you know what? For a millennial, especially the younger millennials, email is just so yesterday. I'm not checking email. Mm-hmm. They're really not even on Facebook anymore. Mm-hmm. Where they are, there's so many other channels they can be on now. And you have to figure that out. But so one of the first questions I ask a millennial is, how do you want me to contact you? And they're going to give me the permission to either text them. And see, I need permission to text them. Because to me, you're going to text me, I need to know you, or we need to have some kind of relationship. See, whenever I send a text, I always start off, this is Tim Moore. I want to know who I am before, because it's just a number that's showing up. And you're like, I don't know who this is.
Exactly.
So I ask for permission. And so when you're a person from an older generation, a more mature generation, works with a millennial, you have to understand, dress is not important. It's just skill sets I bring. It's what value can I do for you? Does it matter whether I wear, cargo shorts or khakis? It might matter to the boomer because he says we need to look nice. But for the millennial, he says, look at all I bring here. Mm-hmm. Look at my skill sets. That's what the value is. And so that's where the clash comes in.
Mm-hmm. And I can understand that. Cause, I mean, I've noticed that over the years that there's been a lot of influence that has been coming into what we wear at work. Mm-hmm. Because it has gone from wearing ties and shirts and all that stuff, or suits for that matter, going down to wearing jeans and t-shirts or cargo shorts and things like that. But I think that what makes, in my mind, at least I would assume, in the boomer's mind as well, is what makes a well-rounded representative of your company is someone who actually cares about their appearance too. And that doesn't seem to be something that the millennials particularly respond to yet.
Well,
but I've heard that it's like...
Yeah, but what Tim said was so important, because the millennial is going to be sorting for what you can do, what your knowledge is, and what your skill is. And to them, that's going to look more superficial, that you care more about appearance. You get how that's a reverse of the paradigm I grew up in.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I would assume that eventually millennials are going to actually care about their appearance at some point, right?
Well, but I want to add something to it from just mine studying I've been to your class too, is they can care about their appearance, but it may not look like what you call well-dressed. That's the thing to get, our good friend's daughter's real creative and she cares about how her outfit goes with her tattoo, in a sense. You could see there was intentionality I never saw before with it, but it doesn't look well-dressed to me. I'm just saying, correct me if
you're right. Things come and go. When I was growing up, you can't tell now, of course, but when I was growing up, the battle was over hair, especially for a male.
Right.
There were huge battles of all my friends as we came through school with their fathers who were either World War II or Korean veterans. And here are these kids letting their hair grow longer.
Uh-huh.
And there was this clash going on.
Right.
But now it's not a clash, but it's like, I don't know if I respect. Look, how much? First off, you showed up late, asking for a couple hours for lunch, and look at the way you're dressed. I don't know if we need you around here. Mm-hmm. That's the baby boomer mindset.
Right.
For millennial, he says, I showed up late, but I'm working till 9. You leave here at 4:30 or 5.
And
I'm
got
staying.
More done.
And I got more done than you ever thought about doing with your old ledger. You're in there and I'm in here firing the computer. Yeah. And I got smoke coming out of my computer. I'm going so fast.
Right.
So there's just different value sets that are happening there.
So with the different values though, are businesses actually seeing the outcome, a positive outcome from this, or is this just more of the same, or maybe it's negative?
I think businesses, give you an example. I was at a client yesterday having a conversation. They were talking about bringing people in and trying to find people to work in their business. They were a part of a construction process. You know, they building buildings and digging, you know, long pipeline trenches and, you know, all this kind of stuff. They supply a lot of equipment through them. So I'm listening to all that and they're telling me that, well, we're at the McKimmon Center at a huge job fair. Red Hat and all these other companies they've got 200 people standing in the line. These students want to be there. Mm-hmm. We're tackling people and dragging them over. And I thought for a minute, my response to them was, if you want to get their attention and you want them to understand what's going on here, because you have great opportunities to make a lot of money in your business, mm-hmm. but they're seeing the sexy side of, I need to be in one of these software companies. I need to be with Cisco. Or I need mm-hmm. to be with somebody that's so cool, because that's what mm-hmm. everybody thinks in college is cool. Stop them for a moment and say this, let me explain to you what you're seeing down there. And they'll stop for a minute. They'll listen because they've done this their whole life. Mm-hmm. People have given them advice, professors, parents, they're very close to adults in their world mm-hmm. and say, see those 200 people? In 12 months, it'll be 15. That's all they all have left because they're going to run through them. And they're just going to, you come to our company, we're going to nurture you. And in 12 months, you'll probably be making somewhere like $60,000. And you're going to work decent hours instead of that. Do you understand? You have to contrast and compare mm-hmm. so they can understand. And my advice to them was let them go and hire them on when they step away from that. Because
right.
It's too crazy.
Now we took baby boomers selling. Let's try if a baby boomer is trying to sell to a millennial. We'll do that one.
Okay. So if I'm a baby boomer, which I am, and I'm selling to millennials, first off, I make sure that I have the right channel of communication. I also understand that, you know, as technology driven as they are social. They will meet you in a coffee shop. They like that kind of work. They feel like it's important stuff, and it is. It's a great place. That I don't have to come to your office or you don't have to come to my office and we don't have to sit across the desk. We can have a cup of coffee and talk about this. They're a very gregarious group of people. They love networking. Networking is a big thing to them. They feel like they're making contacts and I know these people. I've got somebody. I've got a hook. I've got all these people. So that's where they're trying to figure out. So for me as a boomer, I'm going to be a part of that world. I also understand they have huge circles and not just one or two. They have four, five, six circles of friends that they come from different places. There's the work circle. There's the college circle. Mm-hmm. There's the maybe the church circle or the
Dungeon and Dragon circle.
They have all these circles. They circle around and some of them have people that are in, you know, they link over where there's one person in three circles. But once they understand that you have their best interest in mind. I'm just trying to help you. I'm not going to walk in here and try to sell you something and make you feel like I know the answers. Let me explain to you, and you can judge it, and you can look it up. Well, let's get out your laptop or your iPad. Let's take a look at this. And once they see that, they are your best salesperson. Mm-hmm. You go from trying to sell them to they're going to drag people to you. I've tried to convince banks about this, that if they understand millennials will drag all their buddies to your little community bank.
Interesting.
Here they will come because they're all tired of being beaten up by the big guy and they want to come where somebody really appreciates them. One of the things, I was at a bankers convention just this week. And we were talking about millennials, the future of banking. Right. I said, you don't need these big banks. Yeah. I walked into my bank. Do you know how much space is wasted in the bank? I walk a huge lobby. No. Nobody's sitting. Nobody's in there. Right. A couple tellers and a guy at the desk. I'm like, you've got a lot of real estate space. What you need to do is be where do all the millennials hang out in Raleigh?
Well, like some of the co-working spaces, possibly. Like
co-working.
Yeah. What parts of town?
Frontier.
In the business areas, right? Or where the restaurants are.
Well, like that. Let's talk
coffee
about
shops.
Downtown Raleigh.
Yeah. Downtown Raleigh.
There's also the South Glenwood area.
Yeah.
And then there's the RTP.
Yeah.
My advice to them was, why don't you just find a little cubby place where you can brand your bank and have someone in there, and they're just there to – certainly they can come in and get some money if they need it, but the idea is for me to help you understand what you need to do next financially. And so it doesn't have to be huge. It could be just big enough for one person to work in there. You don't have to have this huge branch anymore. Branches will change. Things will – the technology is changing. Maybe it could even be a place where they're not even there, that they're on a screen where you can come in and link up and have a conversation with somebody
that Coastal Federal does that.
Yeah, they do that.
So you walk into they have a couple customer service reps. They have a few offices in there, but then you want to go and make a deposit. It's go over to the machine, pick up the phone. If you're face to face with someone in the central office, and they scan your check in, and it's very much like, I mean, it's kind of a cool experience, but I like personally, I mean, I might be old fashioned here in this sense, but I do like the face to face with someone who's handling my money.
Well, and there's something to that. And so maybe your office doesn't have to have all those. You just got that one person in a little space of maybe 8x6. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you can sit and have a conversation. If you're in the line, you'll be the next one in. So it's going to look different in the future, but millennials do value very gregarious group. But high on technology, and it drives them. But go to any coffee shop. Who's sitting in there?
Right. They are with laptops.
Yeah,
are.
Yeah.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about Gen X, because that, to me, is one of the most dissed communities. Well, also, you know, my stepson's at the other end of it. He's a little bit younger. But that's the one where I really realized they were we were still in the workplace, and really – They kind of got, in my view, cut short on the mentoring that we might have got.
Oh, they got no mentoring.
You know,
the worst thing a baby boomer does, you have to understand, so you get this part. Yeah. Baby boomers, 80 million, very competitive group, workaholics, stay late, come in early. They do all those things. Mm-hmm. I don't share anything with you because I don't want you to be a competitor of mine. Mm-hmm. At work, I'm not going to tell you what – I might give you a few, hey, don't do these stupid things so you don't get fired. But I'm not going to tell you what made me successful and what – they are the worst mentors of all the generations are baby boomers.
Yeah.
So Gen X got none of that. They got none of that. Hey, let me explain the ropes around here. If you want to make this, don't even waste your time with that. This is where you need. They don't share that with you.
It's sort of like they feel like they were shortchanged, and they were. To some extent, they were. I mean, to give a license for another version of victimhood, but in the sense of the mentoring area, so that's it.
Right.
So there's a unique suspicion.
Very suspicious.
A very effective data searching that seems to be important.
Well,
for Gen X.
There's a lot of reasons for that.
Yeah.
First off, before we begin, you Gen X, love you to death, and you're going to be running the office as we have about 12 million, 12,000 baby boomers a day right now are retiring.
Yeah.
12,000 walking out the door and not coming back.
Yeah.
Who's taking the places? Well, by and large, the management spots are now ready for the Gen Xers.
Yeah.
Small generation, but here they are. Now, they weren't mentored very well, so they've got a road. But about the life that here they come as they begin to take this. Their life started with smaller families than baby boomers had.
Yeah.
So usually one or two children.
Right.
They were at home and latchkey kids. Most of them came home with a key around their neck or was hidden in that rock, that fake rock thing. Yeah. And they opened the door.
Entertained themselves.
And at that moment in their life, most Gen Xers will tell you that they were there when the internet came into the house and they were growing up there as they came into full fruition, the laptop computer or the desktop computer, the big one, and they would sit there and surf the internet in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So the computer and the internet is their friend. This is the group that will never even go on a vacation until they've seen all the
research.
They're going to research huge. They're data. Amazingly good researchers.
Yeah.
And if they were going on a vacation, well, what's it look like? What's the hotel look like? I need a 360 of the room. What's the pool look like? What's the name of the bartender? Oh, that's cool. How do you get from the airport to the hotel? How do you, they know all this? They want to know everything, you know, and so they're very inquisitive people, self-sufficient. On the other hand, because they were alone like that, suspicious. Think of all the things that happen in their life. They're very suspicious. They're cynical, untrusting, sometimes seen as unhappy because they kind of they shy away. They would rather have, if I could just get a door on my office, you know, right. Shut this out. But that's where they come from for a lot of reasons. And in their lifetime, you think about the lens they look through, Watergate. Yeah. You think about all
wars.
And things that were promised by politicians and not delivered, things that were promised by religion. All these things have crashed around them. Yeah. They don't trust anybody or anything. Yeah. And to tell you the truth, as a person you're trying to sell to, it's almost like they have Teflon on.
Uh-huh.
It's, you know, that, because don't bring that one close call
jump to me.
It's not going to work. Don't try to close me right here because I need time to go back and look. I need time to go back and research that if you're telling me the truth.
So these are the group of folks that just can't make decisions also.
No, they make good decisions. They just take a little longer because they want to make sure.
And they're really checking the data out.
They want to check you out.
They're going to check the reviews out. They're going to check the validation out.
Exactly.
You know, they're going to do their homework.
They're the worst customer you will have, but they will be the most loyal customer you will ever have once you convince them that you've got their best interest. Okay. And they will even let you make mistakes and say, listen, he's going to make a mistake, but I trust him because everything he's done is right. So if I'm selling to you, the first thing I do is I lay out my premise for what I'm here for and all that. And then I say, I want you to check up on me. I'm going to give you some links. I know you're going to do your research and I'm not here to try to sell you today. Let's just make a pact. I'm not selling you anything. We're just discussing this. And here's some websites and links that you can check me out when I leave. There's a trust factor built right there.
Which is why social is so critical to them.
Social is key to that group.
But also the educational information in the buyer's journey is so important in social selling because they really want the data.
Okay.
So that's the interesting piece of it is. And they're going to be the first workforce available for management.
Yes.
Because, you know, that comes forward with it.
So let's talk about you mentioned the buyer's journey, right?
Yeah.
So if they're doing a ton of research. Gen X is doing a ton of research right now. And
they are.
Are millennials doing, is there some of the behavior carrying over to millennials as well? Because we do talk about how buyer's journey has changed because the buyer has changed. They are doing a tremendous amount of research. And that sounds like a Gen X thing. But are millennials doing the same thing?
Millennials are everywhere.
Okay.
To me, a Gen Xer takes the time and focuses on this. I'm going to build a base of knowledge to help me make a really great decision. A millennial say, let me check with all my buddies in my circles. I'm going to put it out. I'm going to blast it out
still
here.
Still social, but a different
very social, but a different of kind social. Of social.
Right.
I mean, they're saying, have you ever heard of this guy? Have you?
What do you think?
What do you think? What kind of? So they're gathering their opinions from these big circles of people. They're on, and they used to be chat boards, but now they're more like Twitter or
Instagram or really a lot of texting.
They're just firing going it all around, checking with everybody, and they're all saying, hey, and the difference. One difference is. Gen Xers aren't as while they love their parents and they were their parents' friend, millennials are their parents' best friend. There's a different relationship. Millennials will call their parents and say, what do you think? My son has never taken a job without asking me. He always calls the dad, let's run this thing down. I said, okay, let me listen. I just said, Dad, I'm not working there anymore. It's been a year since I've been there. Right. But my son talks to me every time he makes a move. And you're as a Gen Xer, you're kind of in the middle, and you say, they're there, but that's not their business. That's not their business to be in line.
That's very true. I don't want my parents in my business. So.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, that's true. It's true with Emery too. You know, he's if you need it, he's there. And but he's not. It's not the first choice to come.
Yeah.
So that's excellent.
Very interesting. So basically, from a buyer's journey standpoint, content doesn't have as significant a pull for the millennials for making decisions as their circle of influence.
Without a doubt.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. So then we've got to figure out how do you infiltrate the circle of influence?
Well, here's how you do it. First off, I say, listen, I'm not here to sell you. I just want to present an idea to you. Mm-hmm. If you've got a few of your friends, you want to meet at a shop or you want to meet at a boardroom or somewhere where I can, let me just show it to you and see what you think. I'm going to ask for your opinions. Could we make it better? Could we do it differently? Is it a different way to pack it? Should it be a different color? Should it be able to order online? Now, I will tell you this, millennials want to be able to, they want to order right now. They're instantaneous. I want it
They've
now.
Gotten so much instantaneous.
They grew up in an instantaneous world.
Right.
But you share all that with them and gather their opinions and value them and say, look, these are things we can do. They leave there going, we help them, you know, come up. Why don't we buy some of that stuff? Mm-hmm. And now they're out telling their friends. Mm-hmm. And then you say, well, if you got anybody else you want me to show this to and see what they think. And so it's a different kind of, it's a different way of selling.
Very interesting.
Well, it's the journey that each generation takes to mm-hmm. get there. Mm-hmm. They all get up every morning and they put on their prescription glasses mm-hmm. and they look through all the things that happen in their life.
The filter of their experience.
What is it? It is a filter. And they look through and, you know, that prescription says, you know, it was funny. The other night we're watching the TV and the protest on the college campuses. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, they're just spoiled. And then my wife, well, you know, that was kind of us, wasn't it?
Right. Another perspective. Yeah, right.
Yeah, but I, yeah, that, yeah, that, yeah. Yeah. But we had a war we were trying to stop. Yeah. So you have some things come and go, but in the journey through life, you are a culmination of all the things that happened while you were growing up. The world events, mm-hmm. the kind of books you read, the kind of movies that were on, the music that was being played. All those things make you who you are, including whether you came home and went in the house, in a quiet house, and you had 3 hours before mom and dad came home. And you did, you know, so at that time you learned things. You saw and you know the computer much better than your mom and dad will ever think.
Uh-huh. That's for sure. Outstanding. We got some. Do you, anything else you have?
One thing that I just had this, you know, this epiphany about is that if the buyer's journey has changed that much for millennials, then everyone who's selling marketing automation right now has got some issues coming up soon.
Right.
Well, right. It's automation's still important.
Right.
But it's just in a different way. Because they rely on all the data. They want to pull up their phone and say, well, I got the answer to that. Yeah. I got it right now.
And they are looking at reviews too.
They look at everything. They gather it all. But then they kind of usually filter it through their friends and even their parents to get back to their. Gotcha. So there's a lot going on there. There's so much. And, you know, the workplace is changing rapidly too. I just heard somebody the other day say, this was a Gen X talking to me. And he says, why do we have to set up all of our workspace? Because millennials want to have a big open space.
Right.
You know, he liked to have his closed space. He says, I can't have a conversation with them. I don't know what to do. Right. I don't know how to approach it. And there's so many different layers of this as we go along that, I do know this. This is the end of 2015.
Yeah.
By 2020, which is just really
just around the corner.
Just 4 years and a month, right. Or less than a month now.
Right. They're going to land. Oh, well, no, that's another thing.
55 million jobs are opening up in this country as baby boomers retire. 55 million new jobs or available jobs are going to open up. Wow. I think unless there's a massive world economic crisis, the problem of finding a good job and being paid well. So I think those we're moving because every day 12,000 walk away from their job. Mm-hmm. And so you've got people coming in and the problem at the workplace is how do I as a Gen Xer or a baby boomer or late, you know, so maybe I was born in 63 and I'm still here. How do I take all these millennials who in 10 years will be 75% of the workforce?
Uh-huh.
10 short, well, nine years now.
Right.
9 years will be 75% of the workforce. That's all you're going to have. Right. So you better start adjusting to them.
Right.
Because
that's
the truth of the matter, they have to win. They're going to be the customers and they're going to be the workers at your company.
Yeah.
You cannot hold them to the values of your generation if you're older.
Right. Very interesting.
Excellent. Well, this has been a fantastic show, and we're going to also make sure to put information below to find out you've been.
So how can people learn more about you?
Yep.
Oh, a lot of different ways. Of course, they can check us out on Twitter. It's Tim Moore Carey, all the other T-I-M-M-O-O-R-E Carey on Twitter.
Yep.
That's my handle. And you can read all kinds of stuff I put on there every day. Yep. You can go to our Facebook page, which is Tim Moore Speaks.
Excellent.
Tim Moore Speaks. You can also go to LinkedIn. And see my LinkedIn. Be a friend. Tell me you heard this today and you want to be a friend. I'll friend you or link with you. And even more than that, if you want to go to my website, timmoorespeaks.com.
Excellent.
Is there.
And we'll make sure we'll put all the links in the show notes for that.
And I remember you being in the my first Twitter class. Remember when we started tweeting?
I was the most, just so you guys know.
Yeah.
This was 8 years ago.
8 years ago, yeah.
I went to a Twitter class because Twitter, I was hearing about it.
Right.
And Martin and the gentleman that was with you that day.
Wayne Sutton.
And I stood there belligerently and said, why does anybody in the world want to know what the heck I'm doing? That's a solid baby boomer statement.
That was a great
question. I was like, I don't think anybody cares about what I'm doing. And
that's the best way to reach you.
And without a doubt. And Wayne looked at me and said, you think they don't want to know, but they're curious about knowing you and they want to build a relationship. And I sat back in my chair and went, oh my God, somebody really wants to know. And the truth is that I have thousands of Twitter people that I get text all the time. And
sometimes you share your musical skills. People enjoy that too.
So I think it's important for anybody in business at any level. I'm just a speaker. I go around the country speaking and doing research. But if you don't have some type of social media presence, I have something going on, whether it's Facebook or whether it's LinkedIn or Twitter, every single day. Yeah. We've got videos all over the place of me speaking. So if you want to know how to find me, just go in and Google Tim Moore, keynote speaker. It'll come right up and you'll see.
Excellent. Right. Well, this was another great show.
Yeah, very good. So as far as any apps and all that stuff to check out for, so let's transition right now real quick into some social selling tips and apps. The one thing that I have seen that LinkedIn has continued to push their mobile app, their brand new mobile app. There is a couple little things about it that you should be aware of. For example, you can't customize your invite apparently on the mobile app anymore. Before, you used to be able to, but based on a comment on Coca Sexton's update, Jeff Weiner actually brought in, Jeff Weiner is the CEO of LinkedIn, actually brought in his, I think his VP of engineering and said, this feature will be back soon. So be aware, just some updates and things like that. If you're on Android, download the LinkedIn app and put it on your phone. Still only 10 million users. Trust me, you're going to want to have this app.
It's definitely on your phone. Improvement, yes. Except for that one thing they need to get back on it.
So, and then other than that, I think as far as any social selling tips, do you have?
Well, the big thing is how to get our wonderful sticker on LinkedIn to sales, you know?
Well, that's not exactly a social selling tip.
Yeah, I know.
It may actually help with opening up a conversation.
With
so
us, yeah.
Let's go to wrap it up then. Well, so basically, we have a sticker, and it's a really nice sticker. It's not just a sticker. It's not one of the ones you get at the doctor's office.
Right.
So this is a nice 3x3-inch vinyl sticker. You could take and put it on your car. It's good for indoor, outdoor, anything like that. All you need to do to get one is just go leave a comment and a review on iTunes. Yeah. Right? Now, we have mentioned this several times in the last few episodes. We would love your review on iTunes or Stitcher or one of the other platforms. Take your review, come out to linkingintosales.com/sticker. And paste it and fill out the form, paste in your comment, and we will mail you a sticker absolutely free. So
That's it. And this is a great show. This is Martin Brossman.
And I'm Greg Heyer. Thank you very much for listening and watching to the Linking into Sales Social Selling Podcast. Be sure to check us out on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Google+, YouTube, and make sure you're subscribed on iTunes.
And Elise will be back joining us on the next show. So she's off learning new skills. So she'll be back with us soon.
Very good. You guys have a great weekend.